You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
This is the Landry Football Podcast, brought to you by the folks at Radio Influence. We're going to talk a little bit more about pro days, the origin of pro days, workouts in general. We're going to take your questions in the chat room. Any questions, bring them aboard. We're going to get them. The evolution of kind of the combine and the pro days and whatnot. Since we didn't have a combine this year, want to get into that. How the virtual meetings are going with players versus the personal ones that we're really involved in. So we've got that. Some news and notes inside LandryFootball.com that you want to check out about some of the pro days, about where some of the leanings are of what teams are thinking as they get into their starting soon their draft meetings. There is a new overtime rules concept that the Ravens are putting out. I'll tell you about it. Got a lot to get to. But again, as always, want to remind you that LandryFootball.com is where you want to go to get the most detailed inside information about the game of pro football, college football, scouting, coaching, you name it. We've got it all. We've got the first two rounds up on our horizontal draft board. So you want to know how many first-round grades, how many guys are graded in the elite level, how many guys are graded in that 6'9 category versus 6'5, we got that for you. How many total first-round grades? Got 24, actually, so you can see who they are. Got the second-round grades up. How many early second-round value? How many mid to late second-round value? You're going to begin to get a better visual. Wait a minute. Oh, look at those numbers. Start adding the numbers and you start to see it. The light clicks on and you start to see it like you're in a draft room. Okay, I get it. Mid third round. There's second round value on the board there. Mid fifth round. Wow, there's third round value. Maybe even 5'9 grade, high third round value on the board. Starts to become clear to you. So we're doing it this way. I always try to figure out how to best present the information to our viewers, subscribers at LandryFootball.com and here. Obviously, it's too cumbersome, too much detail to go through every minutia here on this podcast, but we'll give you an overview of what you can get. So when you get to see the overall players, the overall numbers, it begins to make some sense to you, more sense than normal. So, we think you're going to like that. If you're not yet a member of LandryFootball.com, do so today. So I tried to put just the first round up. Did that. So you get to see that. Then you see the second round, meaning you see the first round, then followed by the second round. And we'll have, by the end of the day, the third round. First round, second, third. And we'll get through the fourth round because that'll take you through, numbers-wise, they're players. There are enough to draft with guys with fourth-round grades and above. So, again, you don't grade players and say, this is a first-rounder, a second-rounder, a third. It's not how it works. You grade a player in that category. Is he an immediate starter? Is he a probable starter? Does he have a chance to make and contribute? And then you got two categories of that, the high and the low level in that group. Those things are really important to check out. Then you got, the potential backup contributor guys. So guys are graded into tiers, into grade understanding. What does that mean? What does a 5'9 grade mean? Potential starter, contributor. Well, you know what that means. And then we go into details of how we come to that, and we have the criteria for each position. But understanding that's important. So you might have, in terms of immediate starters, you might have 15 players graded in that category, 20, 25. You might have potential starters. You might have 20, 25, 30, 40, 50. You can't say, all right, well, this guy is really good. He fits into this category, but we got too many players to fit the numbers of the draft. That's not how it works. Guy is good enough or he's not. He fits into the category if he's not. That's how you determine the value of a pick. That's how you determine the value. First of all, you got to determine the value of the player. So we give you those breakpoints. It's a, there is nobody that has it like that. You will see list of a top 100, top 50. That's useless. You think a guy that's ranked, 62 versus somebody that's ranked 42, you think there's a big difference. They may have the same grade. Yet this is where the narrative, the false narrative comes out. Oh, I can't believe they took this guy. This guy that, first of all, you don't know how that particular team graded him. And they'll be determined whether they're right or wrong. But it's also about understanding that the grades are the same. And where you may go among players with equal grades, again, who's the cleaner medical? Who you're more comfortable character-wise? Who's a better, need fit for you? Because the grades are the same. Don't factor need into the grading of the player. Factor the need into the selection of the player. Two different things completely. So there's trying to get you to understand and think of it like a front office, a scouting director will look at it and putting it. So check it all out at LandryFootball.com. We'll do the horizontal board first and make sure that you get that. And that is the one that people work off. And there, again, 32 different boards. I will have more first-round grades, more second-round grades, more third-round grades, more fourth-round grades than each individual team. Why? Because each individual team is doing their draft board for themselves. So certain players don't fit what they want in a corner, in a running back, in an offensive lineman. Zone blocking team is not going to have somebody that's a man blocking offensive lineman on their board. I have to, instead of doing 32 boards and confusing the hell out of folks, as I tend to do sometimes, I've got to put together a board that's everybody. So I put the value of everybody. Guys are great, man blocking, zone block. I'm going to put him where he belongs relative to the style that he plays and to the team that he would fit. Okay, but that's universal. That's not for everybody. That's not going to be, my team didn't take your guy that was ranked 23rd, Chris. What the hell are they doing? Okay, it's not a fit for them. Wouldn't be somebody that they would have ranked that high. But that's giving you an overall understanding and an overall league board is something that people don't explain enough, and it's why, quote unquote, these people that grade that don't understand that. They've never operated a draft and never really been on the road as a scout. They just gather information. So check all of that out at LandryFootball.com. Take advantage of our scouting season offer now. Been to a few pro days recently. As I mentioned yesterday on yesterday's Scouts Eye Show that I do on Landry Football, the pro days are taking on not a different meaning this year, but a different level of importance in that it is every season, post football playing season, there is a need to get as much information as you can on the players. Medical, character, workout, tangibles, intangibles. A lot of unearthing of information. We do that a lot at the All-Star games, and we certainly do it a lot at the Combine. As you know, we did not have a Combine this year. So the pro days, or multiple pro days, even at same schools, are allowing us to get there and gather the same information, put in a little different format to school. Everybody's having to do it. So it's not like somebody has an advantage over the other, does not. But what it is, it's a different, it's a different look with how you go about taking the information, particularly the tangible workout information. There's no such thing as, well, this guy ran a 4.5. He ran a 4.5 where? On which surface? You've got to convert the times, and I don't think people quite get that a certain surface at certain places are faster than others. And you got to allow for that. We're talking about, you know, 4.5 seconds versus 4.6 seconds. And very often the difference is not just a tenth of a second faster, one player versus another. Very often the difference is just the surface. So a time without the surface and the conditions is meaningless. So when you hear this guy ran 4.35 at such and such a day, that is meaningless. Okay. It has to be converted. And so why do we do the workouts? Why don't we just look at them on film and say this guy's fast? Well, we do. The film and the speed and the strength and the quickness on film is absolutely what we ascertain on film and in person watching games. But it is relative to who they're doing it against. A guy will always say, a receiver that runs 4.7 and a corner that runs 4.72, neither one, which are capable of playing in the league, not going to be fast enough, that receiver is going to fly by the corner. It's going to look, wow, he's fast. He's not fast. He's fast relative to that guy. Remember, everything that we do with the scouting process is projecting onto the next level. So the speed relative, the game speed is different than track speed, no doubt. Some guys can run a faster time in a prepared. That's no doubt. But this is why we don't live off the times and the workout numbers. We combine it what we see on film. And it has to marry up. It's the 10% of the time when the workout and the film doesn't match up that you got to do more work. Why? But understand, it's why it's so important when you're scouting. It's why we do area scouting. And then we break it down by positions. People say, why don't you just go and scout by position? Well, it's not fiscally responsible to be just having multiple people going. You want to know this because you want to know your area. If somebody, you're evaluating a player, you want to know about the player that they're doing it against, even if they're not a draft prospect this year. You need to know, this pass rusher is just dominating this tackle. Well, you better know who the hell that tackle is. He may not be a prospect, but you better know, because that's going to affect the overall look of the player, right? Oh, he's dominating. Well, you're not looking at the result. How many sacks he got? How many yards? How many those are all numbers. Okay. The numbers are not going to translate unless the skill set translates. And so when you're looking at a pass rusher, you're looking at the get off, you're looking at the speed, you're looking at the balance, you're looking at the change of direction, you're looking at the closing finish, you're looking at the initial quickness, you're looking at the hand speed and foot speed, you're looking at the ability to be able to get off of blocks, arm length, extensions. All those things are things that are going to tell you the likelihood of them projecting from one level to the next, high school to college, college to the NFL. Got 22 sacks in his senior year at a big-time program. That doesn't tell you that it's going to translate. It is a production indicator. If a guy has that many sacks, probably has got those things that I just mentioned, but probably is not definite, and you want to make sure. And some of those may come off weaker competition, may come off. So the whole, you know, well, this guy should be ranked here because he's got these numbers is immaterial. He's got those numbers based upon certain skill sets or certain competition that makes his skill set look a little bit better. So the very thing that people say is the reason why they like this guy are the wrong things to be looked at, which is why most people just gather information to have talking points. I like this guy. My team should draft this guy. And I read this list and I heard this. And again, consider the source and always ask what are their credentials to evaluate. And if, quite frankly, you find one of them that really knows, let me know, because I don't really pay attention to them, and none of them really have any background and certainly are not involved in doing it. The pro days, because of the lack of the combine, is allowing us to get a lot of that information. The looking at certain metrics will tell us how a guy will translate. So a certain speed, a certain quickness, a certain strength, certain metrics will tell us how a guy is going to translate. And that tells us, comparatively speaking to what guys have done in the past, and how well it goes. But things evolve, right? Think about this. Safeties. What position, and when we talk about offensive linemen, receivers, and quarterback play, the position that has changed their profile the most is on the defensive side. And it starts with safeties. Think about it. If you're going to have more receivers and you're going to throw the football more and you're going to work out a spread, what does that tell you? Just even if you're a casual fan, you got to match up and cover those guys, right? Well, who are you going to cover? Well, what do you have? Well, we've got smaller, quicker, faster receivers. Well, you better have guys that can cover them. Who's most likely to be able to mirror those guys? Smaller, quicker, cover corners. We're going to get a big receiver, a big slot. We're going to get these tight end looking bodies that flexed out. Who's going to cover those guys? Well, not those small, quick cover. We better have guys that have some size. The safeties used to be strong and free. We used to discuss that. They're interchangeable now. If you have a safety that can't both tackle well in the box and cover, you're in trouble. Really important to understand. So the skill sets and the traits for safeties have changed. So the size factor is not as important, meaning the size is great, but if they're the 215, 220-pound safety that can't cover, he comes off the field in a lot of more situations. So it's nothing against that guy, but that guy's more built like a linebacker. Can he play linebacker? Do you work him out at linebacker? Is a projection, you know, that affects where you would put him on your draft board. You have to have safeties that are more cover guys, more corner-looking type guys. Important things to understand in the evolvement. Linebackers are affected. Used to be to have those big 260-pound LaVon Kirkland type guys that can come on and whip the ass of a guard. And, you know, those guys have to be a little bit more mobile as well. Why? You're covering, right? Get some zone coverage. They have to be able to get into their drops and cover underneath. It's a different game. So the skill sets of the position of the players on offense and defense have to adjust to the modern game. You have to have more years of data to study and say, you know what? These guys have to cover. How do you know they can cover? Well, you have to project them in some cases. But here's the things. We watch it on tape, but what if they don't play a lot of man coverage and you play more man coverage in your scheme? Or they play more man coverage, you play zone. You've got to make an adjustment. Well, how do you know? You look at tape, you watch games in person, you watch practices, you watch practice tape, but you also look at metrics. You also look at metrics. If a guy is not asked to drop and he's a linebacker, well, what do? I'm going to put him in drop drills. I'm going to test his ability to turn and run. There are drills we have. You don't read and hear about those times, but we can time that. Pedal and turn and sprint drills, we have numbers that we look to that. You got to allow for the fact that certain guys are new doing it and they're going to have to learn and grow and get better. But these are things that you know. I mean, how would you know that Teddy Bruschi was going to be a really good linebacker? He never played linebacker in college. You had to do your homework. You had to put him through drills. You had to look at metrics. It's not, well, how a guy works out and what he runs or what he benches. That's not going to determine, you know, whether guys will make it or not. What it determines is the skill set that it's going to take and translate. And that will ultimately determine where you can use them, how you can use them, how you teach them, where you play them, so on and so forth. So to me, it was never an issue of, is Teddy Bruschi a make-it player? It's just where. Okay, he's 262 pounds. He's going to struggle, even as a move nose tackle, because that's what he played in college. They moved him a little bit. Could play him at a three technique. Well, he wasn't as explosive as you would need as a pass rusher. So you had to figure out, can he play on his feet? Can he play in a two-point stance? Well, you run drills, you do certain things. All-star games, you can get a feel for it. Well, in that case, you end up getting a bargain, because if he had maybe been asked to do that, no criticism to what Dick and those guys did at at Dick Tomey and the guys did at Arizona. It's just you play them how they can help you, but you have to often project. And so there's a lot of things you look at in terms of the guy's skill set. So the workouts are a really integral part from a tangible standpoint to see where their guy will translate. The other thing we've heard me talk about is the medicals are the most important part. What do we really know about them? What do we think is their longevity? It's important. If you've got two players graded equally, you think both of them are really good. You don't know the second contract capability health-wise. But, because you don't know what's going to happen in a given play in a given game. But if one guy's got a larger medical history than the other, the chances that you might be able to have this player long range on a second contract and be a staple for your team, it could be a tiebreaker. This guy's a little bit cleaner, this guy's not. Now, again, that's based upon longevity, based upon this guy's healthier, this guy's more likely to have arthritic knees because the cartilage damage. You got to look and give a medical grade. But the guy that's maybe has the lower medical grade may end up playing longer because he may have the guy that has better medical grades may have a catastrophic injury into the future. You can't predict the future on stuff like that, but you can do the best you can at ascertaining the certain information that, you know, this guy is a chronic injury and it's not that he's not tough, but, you know, if he's always in the training room, why is it? Is he not tough? Is he has a lot of issues? Is his body a little bit more worn than the others? Those are things you study. Then you've got the personal character and the football character that you study and say, what's the guy's aptitude, ability to learn? You could figure that out from a Teddy Bruschi and other guys. This is a guy that can really learn. His aptitude to learn is very good. His willingness to learn, his passion for the game is really good. You do your homework. Not just, hey, Teddy, you like football? Well, I haven't had a player say, no, coach, I hate it. I just want the money. No one does that. You ask questions that are indicators that they don't really know what you're asking, but you're getting information about their desire of football, their desire of to learn what they learn. Look, how much they know is not an indicator because you have to understand how they're coached. So, if a player's not real knowledgeable about the game, why? Maybe he was only taught certain things. But maybe he was a guy that didn't do a lot of extra studying. You have to determine what it is. Because some guys don't know a lot, but are very smart and become really good, intelligent players once they're put in an environment where they're taught different things. Other guys, they're indicators that, now, he's not real advanced. Why is that? Why didn't he learn a little bit more? Here's the other thing. The bench press, workout numbers in the weight room, they're really important. You know what it tells me? More than anything. Not how strong a guy is, but how much he likes the weight room. An offensive lineman, you can't look at the, for example, bench press numbers equally. You have to correspond it to their arm length. Somebody with 35 and a half inch arms versus somebody with 28-inch arms, it's a apples to orange comparison on bench press numbers. Doesn't mean one is stronger than the other. It means you got to take that 225 up a longer way. Big difference. But when a guy doesn't have good weight room numbers, why? Not a good weight room program? Do they not demand of it? And if they don't demand it, why is a guy not? Does he do what he's told to do in a weight room and then gets the hell out of there as quick as he can because he hates it? Or does he love the weight room? Because the guy that loves the weight room, the guy that loves the film, the guy that can't get enough, he's going to get his body better. He's going to heal better. He's going to prevent injuries better. He's going to recover from injuries better. He's going to get stronger. He's going to learn more about the game. We call them the gym rat type guys. But that's what it is. When a guy has low weight room numbers, the red flag for me is this guy probably doesn't like the weight room. Now, I don't say probably does and move him down. I find out from various sources what this guy is. And that's important. Things like that you learn. You can find out some of that in pro days, but you can find that out on a school visit. All those things are really, really important to understand, and you get a lot. The virtual visits versus the in-person visits are different. Think about any meeting that you might have. Well, it depends on what the meeting is. If you're discussing ideas and you're in a business, and I'm going to appreciate all the questions in the chat room. I'm going to get to them here in a bit. Appreciate your patience. If you're trying to discuss ideas and you got people in your business, that's one thing. When you're trying to do an interview, think about doing an interview. You're trying to hire somebody, and this is what we're doing when we're interviewing players or coaches. Zoom meetings are better than not having a visual component. Not the same as being there. You have breakfast or lunch or dinner with someone, get to know them, a little bit more casual atmosphere. You can get a little bit more about what they're all about. You're on a Zoom call. It's like your camera's on and we're talking and it's an interview and it's official and you know we've got to look this way and the hair's got to be right, except for you and me and you don't have the hair looking right. You do it and it's a little bit more unnatural, a little bit more, you know, not for show, but a little bit more guarded. The guard's up, the camera's on, and I got to say this, I got to say that, I got to look there. It's, you can get information, you don't get all the information. I can tell you what I would do a lot is I would always go, and again, this is pre-COVID, and we'll get back to this, always would go to the coaches convention in January. College coaches convention. You don't see pro coaches. The reason why I went there, I might go to a school and I might visit a head coach in his office. He's busy. He's got people in and out, whatever. He might say something different. Go to a coaches convention. I'm not a drinker. I'm not against drinking. I just don't like any taste of alcohol. But you get into a coach and it's a couple of beers in him and he'll tell you, In a relaxed environment, in a hotel lobby thing, he'll tell you something about a player that he knows you're not repeating it. He knows why you want to know. The guard's up when they're talking to the media, right? Talking to scouts, you'll find out certain things. There were not huge red flags on Isaiah Wilson coming out of Georgia, but there were some issues there. Never came out in the media, and he never had any quote-unquote disciplinary problems at Georgia, but there was some warning signs that on Isaiah Wilson. Now, did anybody expect it to be as bad as it was for people who haven't followed the news? Isaiah Wilson, the first-round pick of the Titans, Georgia, they just released, I mean, they traded him not for a seventh-round pick, just for a few slots to move in the seventh round to Miami. Miami, Brian Flores, knows the young man and said, I'm going to bring him here. Shows up in Miami. They've already released him. I mean, wasn't there a week. And I don't mean to pick on Wilson, but there's a lot of situations. You can learn things that maybe you don't. So getting in those environments in person are valuable. Now, everybody's dealing with the same thing, so there's no competitive advantage. But there's a disadvantage or a competitive disadvantage to getting it right, if you know what I mean. You don't have as much interpersonal relationships one-on-one that can help you get that information. So there's more of a chance of mistakes. Think about recruiting. You think there's going to be more mistakes of this coming class of 2022 evaluating? You don't get that. Well, I think we're going to get kids on campus for camps this summer. But when you couldn't get kids on campus for camps, you couldn't go to high school visits, you couldn't go in at home, you think you're going to know as much about a kid then as opposed to one you can bring them on campus, you can go visit in their home? Common sense, who you think you're gonna know and evaluate better? And they evaluate you because in the recruiting process, they got to decide where they want to go. So they're probably going to be more quote-unquote mistakes made in the recruiting process, there are probably going to be more mistakes made in the information gathering process of scouting that's directly correlated to the lack of interpersonal touch. So The evolution of the combine and the getting this all together was due to the fact that we used to have, well, multiple kind of combines where you have six or eight teams get together and do things. And then we say, let's get all 28, because at the time there was 28 teams in the league. And the only reason why it was done was for medical reasons. Because I can remember it like yesterday, Nolan Cromwell came out of Kansas. And, you know, Nolan was a really good defensive back for the Rams, but he was an option quarterback at Kansas. And God bless him, he had so many injuries. And he was literally going through the airport with these, ever seen these big x-rays and those big, big bags, and he'd carry them around and he'd get them through the, you know, baggage or, I know, I guess you couldn't do it, baggage, carry on. It's a mess. And, you know, you had players like that. He was the poster child for that, but everybody was like that. They pick and they go to this. You're going to take one player, and it's, you know, people will scoff at, well, I'm missing school and all that. A lot of these guys did go to school. Well, they could travel in here or there. Let's do this. Let's have a weekend at one spot. Of course, it was in Phoenix and Tampa and New Orleans. Then we settled on Indianapolis. And it's been there ever since. And this past year was the only year we didn't have it. Get them in there. Everybody do their medicals. All the medical people come in one location. We get all the information. We disperse it. Anybody that has a medical issue at the time of the combine, recovering from a knee injury, a shoulder injury, they get rechecked in April, 10 to 14 days prior to the draft, to see how the progress has gone. It's getting better. It's cleared, whatever the case may be. That was 100% of the reason for the combine. There was nothing done but that. We also measure and weigh them. So we always want to know, because that's part of health. You go to the doctor, I don't know if they measure anymore, but they always get your weight when you go to the doctor, right? It's important. And we do the drug tests and all that. It was only then that we said, you know, we got them here. We're going to do that, but we're going to put them through a drill. We're going to put them, you know, bench press them. We're going to run a couple of drills. And then it went to this and that. Well, you know, let's keep them a little longer. Let's interview them. And of course, you know what the combine is like now. So now we're trying to replicate that from the pro day standpoint. Don't get caught up in the hype of this guy's moving up or down draft boards because of pro days. It's not how it works. It's an information gathering process. Each player is like a puzzle. And the film is worth the majority of the puzzle, but you got some other end pieces and middle pieces that need to be put together. The medical, the character, the interviews, the tangible workout numbers that can tell us how he's most likely to trend late. All those things. In medical, not just healthy or not now or whatever, but testing of his eyes, eye strength. You know, we do tests to where you can see peripheral vision and things like that. Hearing, believe it or not, all those things, the learning test. Why do we do the Wonderlic? Well, we do other tests, but Wonderlic helps determine the ability to read and comprehend quickly. That's all it does. It doesn't measure intelligence. It measures a certain way of learning. If a guy doesn't test well there, it doesn't mean he's not smart. It just means that, okay, I've many times read the questions to the player. I mean, so what it does is doesn't move a player up or down. It just says, look, this guy is going to need to be taught this way. This guy has an issue here. He might need context. He might need some work done with his hearing. All those things are important. They're done in school, right, for kids. This thing is very exact. So you learn as much as you can. I had a player one time I worked out, and it was, I don't know why this sounds like a Kansas segment. It was a kid at Kansas. He was a corner at Kansas. And he could, I mean, I'd throw balls and he could turn and he could catch the ball. He could see it over his right shoulder. Over the left shoulder, he missed every one. The reason, he had a really weak, lazy left eye. And so he couldn't track the ball as well. So he'd think the ball was here and it was there. He couldn't pick it up quick enough. It's important. It's important. I remember when we had some folks at Major League Baseball, when I was running the combine, come in, And one of the things they got out of what we did was the visual acuity test that we did. And that's grown by leaps and bounds. And that was really beneficial for them because obviously seeing the ball out of the hands of the pitcher is just so important to being able to be a good hitter, right? I mean, the quicker you can pick up what it's going to be. I mean, I know Ted Williams used to always say he could see the stitches on the ball. And he could, you know, well, you know, you if you have that good of vision, you don't have good vision, I don't know how you're going to be a good hitter. I mean, you're guessing, and guessing is not going to be a good way to do it. Well, there is, you know, not talked about enough, but being a good receiver, being a good defender, seeing the ball and playing the ball, you better be able to see it, visually see it, and have good vision. And now with corrective surgery, now with LASIK, with just contacts and lenses, there are things you can do to improve it. So maybe things in the past that might downgrade a player, it doesn't downgrade them. It just identifies a problem that you would think would have been uncovered in college, but it doesn't always do it. Garrison Hurst, when he came out of Georgia, we discovered he had no ACL in his left knee. Never had a knee injury. No one ever went into the knee. No one ever did an MRI on the knee or an X-ray on the knee because he never had a problem on the knee. But we do an X-ray and MRI on everything. He didn't have an ACL. Well, what does it mean? So he's not injured. Didn't affect his play. No, it didn't affect his play. But if you don't have a ligament, it's bone on bone. It is like you got a problem in the house, right? You know, it's not an issue. It's not leaking, but you got a problem or a problem in the car. It's coming, right? Well, we knew that longevity-wise, there was going to be a problem with them. So things like that are really important and or the key to be able to learn at the combine in these semi-combines that we're having are going to get a lot of this information. But the pro day stuff is about information gathering. It's not about the hype. This guy ran 4.35. Now he's moved into the first round. No, that's these people that talk about first rounders and this and that and who's going to, it's just all whoever they talk to last, the latest information. So it's not this guy's moving up or down. You can't move up or down a board that hadn't been set yet. And nobody's board has been set yet. Okay. Jacksonville may know who they're taking number one, but their entire draft board hasn't been set yet. So that whole talk about moving up or down is so ill-stated because all it is, well, you got information a week ago as a reporter, and now you got different information, so you're going to report it differently. It's moving up because, of course, you could have been wrong. You're just guessing. You don't know, and you're limited to what people tell you and what they want you to know and not what you truly know. But the evaluation process, being involved in it, is an ongoing thing and doesn't get settled to the end. And I drafted Eddie George and Steve McNair. You know, I didn't know at this stage of the draft. I knew of them and I knew all the details. I hadn't decided that's what we're going to do till later. Going to make sure. Measure 9 times, then cut. It's my philosophy. So you want to make sure, and you want to take a look at all of that. So, understand the pro days. They're very important, but like anything, they're made into hype machines. So much for that. We'll get into some more stuff. Let's get to some of your questions. Tony asks, wondering how good depth of good players is at the bottom of the first round, second round. Well, there's never depth in the bottom of the first round. There's only 24 first round grades, a lot of second round grades. You can find out the details, but I've got quite a few second-round grades. Second-round grades, as I said, will go into the third round, middle of the third round. You can find out who they are. In fact, I printed off my list of at Landry Football, so you can check that out. So you look at the players that are graded from the second round on. The end of first-round grades are 24. Now, 24 first-round grades is more than any team will have because I got 24 for all teams. So the thing is to look at is to look at certain players that I have on my first round are not going to be a fit for every team. So I have to put it for any possible team. So that's why I'm going to have a little bit more. Let's switch down to the bottom. Nolah Jack, I addressed this earlier. I appreciate you. I don't know if it was you that sent in a tweet, and I just got it. I've been busy with pro days, and I addressed this earlier in the show. I'll address it again. He says, on your NFL overall cornerback grade, a cornerback from Ken Crawley from the same. Oh, you're talking about Tampa, yeah. It has been on and off the roster. They're both backups. I know I'm missing something. Yeah, I explained that, and I appreciate you addressing it, because if you're not clear on it, then I didn't do a good enough job of explaining it. And I always need to be called out on that, because the assumption that somebody understands is that's a bad job of coaching. Okay, don't assume. I explained it earlier. Quickly again, those grades are graded, corners that graded out, not who the best corners are, but how they graded out this past year, regardless of the number of snaps. Those guys had a small number of snaps relative to other players. If they had played a larger number of snaps, my projection is they would not have graded out as well. But you can't assume you grade what was there. So their grade was, and it should have been clearly identified, without regard to a minimum number of snaps. The overall grades of corners based on a minimum number of snaps is different. So those are not, Ken Crawley's not one of the four best corners, but he graded out as one of the best per, you know, you can't take away how he graded in the snaps that he graded out. But because he didn't play out a long extended period, and I used the example earlier, if you look at, I don't know, remember Matt, you're a Louisiana guy, remember Matt Flynn, and he played one game for Green Bay one year? Well, he played a couple of snaps, but he played, and he was phenomenal in that game, and he got a big contract with Seattle. In fact, that's who Seattle signed, and then they drafted Samuel Russell Wilson, and they gave Matt Flynn a big-time contract. Well, Matt Flynn looked great in one game, but over a larger sample size, not the same. You can look at it with whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick or people like that. Looking over the larger sample size will maybe expose a player's weakness. But you have to grade what is. And this takes out the, you know, subjectivity out of it. How did a guy grade? And so I appreciate you doing that. I left out the TV cornerback, Tampa Bay corner. Yeah, Tampa corner. So hopefully that explains to you. That's based upon all the snaps that they had, regardless of snaps. So appreciate you doing that. Appreciate you mentioning it, because if you had a question, probably somebody else did, and if you hadn't brought it up, I wouldn't have noticed that. That's a bad job of, I'm not editing, but that's, I'm responsible for what's on there. So even though I didn't edit the thing, make sure you understand that. Rich Coach says, how were pro days back in the 80s and 90s compared to now? Well, we didn't have a lot of pro days. In the 80s, we didn't have many. Pro days began to become more in vogue when agents of players decided we're not going to work out at the combine. Most of the guys worked out at the combine, very few didn't, and there were circumstances, injuries that contributed to it. Well, you had pro days, and then other agents said, you know, we're not going to work. My guy's going to work at his pro days. We're going to control it. School's going to run it. I'm going to run a special pro day for my guy. And so So basically, pro days were not what they are now. Now they're a little bit more elaborate, and more important, because a player didn't work out at Indy. So again, this year, no one worked out at Indy, so it's different this year. But to your point, you didn't have that. I've always said that what we should do is we should, to force more players to work out at Indy, we should move the combine back closer to the start of the draft, and not allow any pro days. You have to have a special pro day administered by the league, and no one can have a pro day unless they're, by the medical staff at the combine, deemed not able to work out. And then for guys that are not able to work out, we'll put a workout day a week, 10 days prior to the draft, corresponding with the recheck physicals, which I don't know if people know this. There's actually, in normal years, a recheck physical in Indy. There's no workouts. It's just a medical recheck. We could work them out a week prior to the draft, and maybe there's 20 guys that couldn't work out at the combine. An excuse for medical reason. Work them out then. Then you would eliminate pro days. What it does is would force them to work out more. You would basically disallow pro days, and I think that would be a good thing. I think a player should work out at the combine. That's that. Everybody's there. The problem with your pro day is you got the same pro day and you got LSU and Notre Dame and, Washington with the pro days on the same day, and you got prospects. Got Washington's got two high prospects. Notre Dame's got prospects all across the offensive line. LSU's got there's no way everybody at all the teams could be at, now this year again, I'm not talking about not this year, normal years. Everybody can't be there. You have to split it up. At the combine, everybody's there. This year, if you don't know, only three people, representatives per team, could be at the pro day because of COVID issue. So it's what's changed over the years. Do you think there'll be a shift back to the run game in another decade? I don't think it's going to be another decade. The shifts, there's no shift. There's gradual movements in football, in coaching. So you actually see it in some cases. You see the Titans run it. You see the Ravens run it. It's there. Some people do it. You'll see more people do it. So the way it works is, all right, look, this is why the tight ends or the receiving tight ends are such a factor. You're going to have big guys. You're going to have matchups. Guess what? We don't know based upon this really good tight end whether we're going to run or we're going to throw. We want to get you small so you're covering all these guys in the spread formation. And we're going to run against your small defense. You see gradual, but it's not like you wake up and boom, it's over. It's going to be a gradual thing, but you see certain teams do it. So you absolutely, football evolves and, goes, and it just, you constantly try to do things a little different. We had option football, right? Where it was all run. You know what the zone read is option football with a built-in pass game. With what is considered in illegal blocking because it's not a run, it's not a pass, it's an option. The option back in the day was the triple option. It was run. You might be able to pull it down and throw it. But now the zone read is option football just with a pass. So it evolves. It's different, and you will see things like that. Do any of the international players have a good chance of getting drafted? You always have players that are in a position to get drafted. Canadian players in other countries, the level of competition is difficult. But depending on the situation, you saw Minnesota really overdraft the German receiver a couple of years ago. You got to be careful with that because their level of football, they're so much at a disadvantage from a development standpoint. You got to be ready to some degree in the NFL, and it's hard to get guys ready. What were your scouting evaluation of David Fulcher out of Arizona? He was a typical big, strong safety, in-the-box strong safety. Will Wolford out of Vanderbilt had left tackle feet, was a really good guard. Chip Lowmiller out of Minnesota was a really good player, good kicker. Herman Moore was one of those big receivers in Detroit before the Calvin Johnson days. They've had a history of it. And then Nola Jack asked his questions, and again, appreciate you doing that. And by the way, if anybody's got a question, the best way to reach me is go to the website, LandryFootball.com, and hit contact Chris and send me an email. And I'll usually get that quicker. So if you sent a tweet, I hope you're the guy that sent the tweet. I answered him today, but hopefully that answers that and clears that up for you. And Tony says, wondering about your opinion on Myles Garrett compared to Aaron Donald. Well, Myles Garrett was, I can remember folks saying how overrated, didn't play hard. People, again, if you don't have information, you don't have knowledge, you don't know. Myles Garrett played with a high ankle sprain at A&M the entire last year. So while it looked like he was taking plays off, he was playing hurt. And you see what a great player he is. Different players, though, Tony. Aaron Donald's been the best defensive player in the league, still is. He's a three technique. He's an upfield penetrator. Miles is a guy that's a defensive end. Different position, elite players, both blue grade players in the league. So outstanding. But Aaron's just been more disruptive. Guys that can penetrate and dominate from a three technique and inside are a little bit more disruptive in that type of system. Now, if you're a two gap front, then the defensive end is going to have more of an impact of being evasive and affecting the quarterback. But Aaron Donald affects so much. affects their blocking scheme. The biggest difference is that Aaron Donald has moved all across the formation. So in addition to Aaron being great, you don't know where he's going to line up. You got to be prepared for him to line up. There's a shade technique, a one technique, a three technique, sometimes a five technique. Miles moves, but not nearly as much. Both great players. It was a great pick by the Browns, and I think your Browns have got a really good team, and they're not quite done. They're still trying to see if they can't get Jadeveon Clowney in for the right price. We'll see if they do that. That's a very impressive defense, and you start to look at some of the issues. The Steelers needing to replace their offensive line. The Ravens are still good. Cincinnati needs to rebuild. By the way, Cincinnati's trying to figure out at five. I think teams like the Falcons at four, the Bengals at five, and the Dolphins at six are in great position to get maybe their best player on their draft board. Well, assuming that Trevor Lawrence is number one on maybe everybody's draft board, the first or the second player on their draft board, meaning if you're the Falcons, the Bengals, or the Dolphins, you may get the first, second, or third player on your draft board at your spot. Now, particularly a Falcon. So you got Penei Sewell, you got a Kyle Pitts type player, a Jamar Chase type player. Those players are probably top three or four on those teams' draft boards. And you're going to get one of them. Why? Because of the, as it always is, teams moving up for the quarterback. Now, we don't know definitely what they're going to do. I think we know what the Jets are going to do at two, and probably what the Niners are going to do at three. So we could see quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. And that also makes for the possibility if you're Atlanta, you're Cincinnati, you're the Dolphins have already done it, but Atlanta, Cincinnati, look at them. They're going to get their phone ringing, and particularly not now. It would be done on draft time, draft day, the possibility of Carolina maybe moving up to see. So I think you may be interested to see. I've got two players with 7-0 grades. I've got two players with 6-9 grades on the draft board, and I've got 20 with 6-5 grades. So you can check that out over at LandryFootball.com, and then we've got all the second-round grades as well. Third-round grades are going up as well later today, and fourth round, we'll have that by the weekend. So make sure that you check that out. And the Rich Coach says, talks of Jimmy Garoppolo going to the Patriots, is that a rumor, real despite this, the Patriots? No, there's really not. I don't think that the Patriots are interested in taking on Jimmy Garoppolo's contract. So I don't think there's anything to it, but stay tuned. I do think there is certainly down the road, I think you can get out from under Garoppolo. I know you can get out from Garoppolo's contract by year's end. So I still think there's a possibility at some point that Garoppolo might be traded. Don't see that. I do think that the Patriots are definitely looking to fortify their quarterback position with a younger guy, the right younger guy, maybe the right veteran to go along with Cam Newton. They believe that Cam, with a healthier year, better supporting cast, will be better, but I don't think they're sold on him long term. So I think they're trying to address that. So we shall see on that. Hey, I had a couple of other things to get into. Nothing new on the Deshaun Watson. Look, 21 lawsuits. Don't know where to take it other than that. Remind me to get into it, maybe even tomorrow, but I don't like the Ravens offensive tackle concept. The overtime concept the Ravens have proposed for our next league meeting, which I say hell no. Not no, but hell no. Overtime. You win the toss, you pick a spot where you want to start. And the other team gets to decide whether they're on offense or defense. Okay, folks, you know, we don't need to gimmick up the sport. I think we're doing it enough. When I have more time to go into overtime and go into that, I'm going to leave it there. No, I don't like the whole gimmick and let's start it and let's do this and give them more points for this. Folks, we had some players, was it Donovan McNabb, couldn't figure out that the overtime rules as simple as it was, much less couldn't figure out it was sudden death. I don't believe in gimmicks. So we've got a lot more information we're going to get to. We'll be with you tomorrow for some more podcast talk. But check us out next week for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Same time, same channel, all part of the Radio Influence family. Appreciate you joining us. Talk to you and see you over at LandryFootball.com. Join us there. Become a member today. We appreciate you. Take care. Have a great one.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.